All right, as we begin our study of God's Word this morning, start off with a few running jokes. Who is the fastest runner of all time? That would be Adam, because he came first in the human race. Why did the trainer want her client to work out where it was sunny? So she would feel the burn. And why do runners go jogging early in the morning? Because they want to finish before their brain figures out what they are doing. So here's my question for you, my trivia question. Which of these five sports have the most running in them? Football, soccer, basketball, baseball, or tennis? What do you think has the most running per sport on that?
Soccer.
I want to say basketball.
Baseball has the least. They run less than half a mile. Their bases are not very far apart. Next comes football. Football, they run about a mile and a half in a game. Lots of pauses and timeouts, of course. Basketball, 2.72 miles is the average. Tennis, in a five-match set, they're going to run 5 miles. And then soccer, the average is 7 miles in a game, in a match. So there's lots of running in those five sports, except for baseball. I guess if you don't like running, go play baseball. Now, our movie today is Inside Out, and I will tell you why this matters. These stats matter here in just a second. I want to show you a quick trailer of Inside Out so you have an idea. Some of you may not have seen the movie, and this will give you a good idea of what the movie is about.
So, how was the first day of school?
It was fine, I guess. I don't know.
Do you ever look at someone and wonder what is going on inside their head?
Did you guys pick up on that?
Sure did. Something's wrong.
We're going to find out what's happening, but we'll need support. Signal the husband.
With a nice pass over the reach, comes across center ice.
Uh-oh, she's looking at us.
What did she say?
What? Oh, sorry, sir. No one was listening.
Is it garbage night? We left the toilet seat up. What? What is it, woman? What?
Signal him again.
Ah, so, Riley, how was school?
You gotta be kidding me.
For this, we gave up that Brazilian helicopter pilot?
School was great, all right?
What was that? I thought you said we were gonna act casual.
Riley, is everything okay?
Sir, she just rolled her eyes at us.
All right, make a show of force. I don't want to have to put the foot down.
No, not the foot.
Riley, I do not like this new attitude.
Oh, I'll show you attitude, old man.
No, breathe.
What is your problem? Just leave me alone.
Sir, reporting high levels of sass.
Take it to DEFCON 2.
DEFCON 2.
I don't know where this disrespectful attitude came from.
You want a piece of this, Pops?
Yeah, well, look.
Prepare the foot.
Keys to safety position. Ready to launch on your command, sir.
Just shut up!
Fire! That's it. Go to your room.
The foot is down. The foot is down. Yeah!
Good job, gentlemen. That could have been a disaster.
Well, that was a disaster.
Come, fly with me, Gacinha.
All right, so Inside Out, there's different characters that control different parts of the emotion, each emotion controlling the body at a different time. And as you can see in that clip, all three characters, the father, the mother, and the daughter, all were being controlled by different aspects of their emotion at different times. So I want to start with some sports figures here and talk to you about what they do in their preparation. Patrick Mahomes is our first person. He starts his daily workouts at 5:30 every morning. Usain Bolt is the fastest man in the world. He trains 3 hours a day and always finishes his reps no matter what kind of pain he's in. He's often found getting sick on the sidelines when he's trying to get his reps in for running. 49ers linebacker Patrick Willis says that he does squats and bench presses at weights that mimic the offensive players that he'll have to handle. So he does 225 pounds for six reps, which is a running back. Then he does 275 pounds for five reps, a big tight end. And then he finishes with 315 pounds for another four reps because that's his offensive lineman. Boxer Evander Holyfield did three-time-a-day workouts to help him reach his peak. And that was not his boxing training. That was just his physical conditioning. He usually boxed someone who was about 10 pounds heavier than he was, who was taller than him, and had a 5-inch advantage in reach. Michael Phelps, before the Olympic trials, went to Colorado for 55 practices in 23 days, all of them in the thin air of 6,300 feet. Quarterback Tom Brady includes brain exercises in his training routine so that he can learn to process information more quickly. And he does two-a-day workouts even when on vacation. Boxer Floyd Mayweather spends 2.5 hours working out, and those are his light days. Michael Jordan, the best basketball player of all time, put in the work. When he first entered the league, he didn't like his jump shot, so he spent his entire offseason taking hundreds of jumpers a day until it was perfect. So what's the point? These athletes could excel in their fields because they put in their work. They put in the effort. They put in the training. Natural ability will only get you so far. So what does this have to do with Inside Out? I'm glad you asked. In the movie, you see inside the minds of characters, and each of the characters takes over at different points in the story, controlling the emotions running the brain and the body. For example, we see anger, disgust, sadness, fear, or even guilt could be controlling someone at any given moment. And so that raises the question, who is at your control panel? You have lots of opportunities to react to what's going on around you during your day. And you also have opportunities to create new things in your day, in the things around you and the people around you. But who's at your control panel? Are you operating out of joy? Are you operating out of anger, fear, disgust, sadness, guilt? Obviously, as we learn in the movie, all of these emotions have their place, and we're created as emotional beings who experience the gamut of the emotions on a given day. But what are you really allowing to control your thoughts and behaviors? Making decisions based on certain feelings, or are you using wisdom? It takes self-control to make good decisions throughout your day, and that's what these athletes demonstrate, having self-control. They're willing to do things that they may not like in order to reach a higher goal. And so today's bottom line is to think about the fact that we all need to live life on purpose. Paul talks about athletes in 1 Corinthians 9:24 to 27. He says, "Don't you realize that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize? So run to win. All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. So I run with purpose in every step. I'm not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what I should. Otherwise, I fear that after preaching to others, I myself might be disqualified." Paul sees himself as an athlete, and instead of looking for a medal or a ribbon, he's looking for an eternal prize. And our minds should be focused on the eternal prize, the rewards that await us for choosing to follow Christ each and every day. Seeing our life as a Christian, as the life of an athlete, is a good analogy. We need to put in the time and the training so we're ready to face the competitions that we face each day. That means making choices today that benefit us in the future. It means making sure that we're being controlled with self-control, not being controlled mindlessly by our emotions. Paul tells us three things about living the Christian life on purpose in this passage. He says, run to win. He says, be disciplined. And he says, act with purpose. So the first thing he says is to run to win. Who wants to run a race to lose? Not many people I know. I suppose some people don't mind losing, but I'm not one of those people. I was watching comedian Jim Gaffigan this week. He lives in New York, and they brag about running the New York City Marathon. He said he asked his friend who had just bragged, oh, I ran the New York City Marathon. He said, oh, did you win? And his friend, no, I didn't win. And then Jim replied, then you really didn't run the New York City Marathon. You lost the New York City Marathon. I'm competitive, and it comes out at game night at our house. And there's certain games that I hate to play because there's no objective winners. Apples to apples, for example, is the world's worst game because it's entirely subjective. There's no right answer in this stupid game. The person picking the answers can just pick whatever criteria he or she wants when picking the answer and just go willy-nilly. There's no rhyme or reason to why they pick. Now, as you can see on this picture, they've sold over 15 million copies of this game. So maybe I'm just weird. I don't know. Maybe people like this game. Or people just tell them it's a great game so they go buy it. I don't know. But 15 million people says that it's not as bad as I think it is. Paul says, though, that if you're going to live your life on earth, you need to live your life on earth to win. That means we focus on what really matters. We focus on our relationship with Jesus. There's no point in living this life if we're not living for Jesus. Jesus is the creator and the sustainer of life. And when we're not following Jesus, we're not following the creator of life itself. Imagine, if you will, trying to get out of this maze. Would you follow the directions of the Cheshire Cat? Or would you follow the directions of the person who designed it? Obviously, if you want to get out, you follow the maze designer. Now, of course, life is not a maze. The goal is not just to get out of life, but the real illustration remains the same. We need to run to win, and that means following the rules and the guidelines of the designer of life. The second thing that Paul says to do is to be disciplined. And discipline is not a word that we like. The words translated in the Old Testament for discipline convey the idea of discipline, correction, or training, all used in the context of bringing someone back to the way that is right. In the New Testament, the words mean admonition, training, and to wear down. But in Hebrews 12, the writer of Hebrews tells us that God disciplines those he loves. And you have forgotten the encouraging words God spoke to you as his children. He said, my children, don't make light of the Lord's discipline, and don't give up when he corrects you. For the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes each one of us he accepts as his child. As you endure this divine discipline, remember that God is treating you as his own children. Whoever heard of a child who is never disciplined by its father? If God doesn't discipline you as he does all of his children, it means that you are illegitimate and are not really his children at all. Since we respected our earthly fathers who disciplined us, shouldn't we submit even more to the discipline of the Father of our spirits and live forever? For our earthly fathers disciplined us for a few years, doing the best they knew how. But God's discipline is always good for us, so that we might share in his holiness. No discipline is enjoyable while it is happening. It's painful. But afterward, there will be a peaceful harvest of right living for those who are trained in this way. Hebrews 12, 5-11. God disciplines those of us who call out to him. We should expect it because we need it. But how much better is self-discipline? We need to do the things that we know we should do so that we can bring glory to God. Listen to the first part of our passage in Hebrews chapter 12 and what the writer says there. He says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. After all, you have not yet given your lives in your struggle against sin. Far better is it for us to self-correct, to have self-discipline, than to rely solely on God's corrective discipline. And the writer of Hebrews says that we should strip off every weight that slows us down. We should shed the sin that so easily trips us up. And how do we do this? We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus. But self-discipline is not only about not doing sin. It's also about doing the right thing. Self-discipline means that we say yes to some things and no to others. Think of it again in terms of an athlete. If an athlete only avoided foods that were poor in nutrition, would he or she be in top physical form for their sport? No. He or she may not be overweight and may be in generally good health, but they're not going to be at the top of their game only by avoiding the bad things. You also have to do good things. So what are the good things that an athlete does? Obviously, it's training and weightlifting and practicing the skills for their sport. As athletes in the Christian life, what should we be doing? We should be praying. We should be reading our Bibles. We should be studying. We should be participating in a local church. We should be serving others. We should be loving others. We should be telling others about Jesus. And we need to practice doing these right things because we know that we should be doing them. And that is part of our self-discipline, learning what the right things to do are and doing them. So to run this race, to run to win, we need to be self-disciplined, doing the things that we should and not doing the things that we shouldn't. The third thing that Paul tells us is that we should act with purpose. Becoming disciplined does not just happen. Michael Jordan didn't accidentally become the greatest basketball player of all time. He put in the work. He was purposeful about it. So the question today is, what are you doing with purpose? I know some of the time during the stay-at-home order, we'd get to the end of the day and we'd be like, where did that day go? Did we get anything accomplished at all at the end of that day? Did the day just waste away? Or was I purposeful with it? If we don't do things with purpose and intention, we're going to fail at the things we're desiring to get accomplished. For example, if you want to save money for a new car, you can't just willy-nilly put money into savings whenever you feel like it. You're not going to reach your goal very quickly or maybe at all. You have to have a plan. You have to have a purpose. You have to have a vision. Proverbs 29:18 says, where there is no vision, the people perish. When you don't have a plan, you won't achieve what you desire. You can't count on sheer luck to get you where you want to go. In fact, here are a few quotes about luck that I think are relevant to our conversation about living our life on purpose. An anonymous quote says, luck always seems to be against the man who depends on it. Oprah says, luck is a matter of preparation meeting opportunity. And Thomas Jefferson says, I'm a great believer in luck, and I find the harder I work, the more I have of it. The preparation is what matters when you get on the court, on the course, the pitch, or the court. If you haven't prepared, if you haven't done things with a purpose, you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve. So who is controlling you today? Are you being controlled by your emotions that are firing from the gut? Or are you being self-controlled through wisdom and careful thought? We need to play to win. We need to be self-disciplined and we need to act with purpose. We need to live your life on purpose.
You've been listening to Pastor Kevin Daniels at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.